Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. My guest today is the CEO of the OGC, the Open Geospatial Consortium, Peter Rabley. Peter, welcome to the show. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you, man.
I was going to say you're kind of the new CEO of the OGC, but you've been in place for a year now, so I guess it's time to come on the show and take stock and tell us what's going on at the OGC and how it's going and what the plans, what the future holds. So why don't we start by introducing yourself and what do you do in geo? What got you into geospatial?
Yeah, well, thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me on. It's not quite a year. It's about 10 and a half months. So May, end of May, will be the first full year. And it's certainly been eventful. I am a geographer by education and training, also an economist. But that being the dismal science, I always go with geography first. So I've had an interest in geography and maps since I was a small boy and used to draw by hand all my old maps. And it's been a passion ever since, even though I've sort of come in and out of the geospatial world over the years. But coming back to, or coming to OGC was, as I reached the sort of towards the end of my career, it's a chance to give back. And really, I think, take on an organization that I think is so important for the industry writ large. And as a geographer, I thought this is the perfect time to come and hopefully put some of my experience and skills to work.
Well, Peter, I'm glad you said that, the importance of the OGC, but before we get into that, let's talk about exactly, you know, many of our listeners are people with a background like myself who kind of come from more of just a software development background and just say, all right, let me dive in and, you know, whip something up and, you know, create a little mashup or something. And so perhaps they don't have the context of the industry training or also this kind of the industry organization. So what exactly is the OGC? Give us that context and what is the role that it plays?
Well, yeah, a bit of the explanation is in the words, Open Geospatial Consortium. We are 30 years old. Actually, last year was our 30th year. We are a nonprofit, a U.S. nonprofit with a European nonprofit affiliate, OGC Europe in Belgium, and we have a nonprofit in the U.K., also called OGC Europe. And that's important, I think, first to say that we're a nonprofit. We were founded by several individuals, namely Kurt Bueller and Dave Schell. And Dave Schell, I had the pleasure of spending some time last year as we gave him an award after a lifetime of focusing on, as he puts it, interoperability. And so I had a chance to really talk to Dave and say, you know, why did you form OGC 30 years ago? And he was at a company called MassComp at the time. And his frustration was that he could not draw vector and raster data over the top of each other. And they were in two different systems. And he realized that vendors had used proprietary data formats to as a capture technique and as a lock-in mechanism. Not sure. The software, interestingly, but the data format. And so he and Kurt Bueller was at the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at the time. And he had been involved in an open source raster processing software called GRASS, which is still around, actually. It's quite a powerful toolkit. And together they started working on how do you create interoperability between different systems for the express idea of exchanging data without having to buy multiple versions of software and even think about extraction and so forth. And so from that came an early group of admirers, if you will, and we got commitments from smaller commercial companies like PCI Geomatics out of Canada, government entities like the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And eventually, over time, the OGC has grown to represent more commercial interests and also more academic and government interests. And I would now tell people that we are a trusted, safe place for competitors and entities that normally might not fully trust each other to come together and work together on solving common problems at a level at which those solutions you create are pre-competitive in nature, right? They're things that everybody needs and that no one entity can afford to do on their own. And so in a non-geographic example would be Betamax and VCR. And if you're like me and a bit older, you'll remember those competing formats. And ultimately, VCR won out. And many of my engineering friends tell me it was that Betamax was the superior technology and approach. But VCR, the VHS won out for whatever reasons. But if you think about it, that was a market failure to have two competing standards. And all the time and effort and money that went into, do I pick VHS, do I pick Beta, Max, do I have to have both? And that was the perfect opportunity to create a single standard. But there were competing commercial interests to do so. And my goal is to make sure that we just don't have VHS Betamax moments in geospatial.
Who are the members of the OGC today? I mean, it's companies primarily, or who's eligible to join, and what is the process to join, and what are the costs?
Yeah. So we're about a third government, a third commercial, and a third academic, which is a nice balance. And actually, it's important to have that balance because as a standards organization, we have to, and as a U.S. standards organization, we have to meet the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, audit every, whenever they show up to audit us, which is every couple of years. And the reason the SEC cares about standards organizations is they're concerned about collusion among commercial members, creating a standard that benefits and allows price fixing and market inefficiency. And so it's very important that we have non-commercial members in the membership to ensure that we are not creating an environment for collusion, that we are truly creating an open, interoperable standard. Which is interesting. I hadn't realized that prior to coming to OGC. And it's one of the things that SDOs, as we're called, standards development organizations, need to be concerned about. Membership's open to anybody. We have recently started a soft launch, and we're going to go live in July 1 with a new individual membership tier, professional and developer. We've lowered the price significantly. So if you're in the U.S., it's $200 a year to be a professional member, and you can engage in any of the working groups and standards working groups, domain working groups, and join the community online and exchange ideas. And then if you're a developer, it's $125. And if you're in emerging markets, that cost is even less. And in some cases, zero cost. And that's something we've worked hard on doing, is trying to make it a bit more democratic and easy to join. We've also lowered the costs for small enterprises and small governments and small nonprofits so that they don't see price as a barrier to engage and make sure their voice is heard in the standards process.
So, I mean, first of all, that sounds great. So does that say, imply growing the membership is one of your top goals?
Absolutely.
For the near future?
Yeah.
Okay.
And not just in terms of the tiers and creating a bit of a pyramid structure of members, but also growing globally as well. We are underrepresented in South America and Central America, Africa, and South Asia and Southeast Asia, and the plan is to expand those geographies as well as expanding the membership more broadly.
What would you say? I mean, give us your impressions from the first year. What has surprised you as you came in, and I guess both positively or perhaps negatively, or just different than you anticipated from the outside.
Yeah, I think a lot of affirmation of things I knew, which was quality, integrity, and just having those reaffirmed. I think what's surprised me is the level of commitment that people who have day jobs, how much they commit outside of their day job, whether they be government, commercial, academics, to the notion that we need fair, open standards for interoperability. It's amazing to see people, chief product officers at big corporates who put real time and effort. And from a company perspective, that's an investment. That's a cost.
Yes, definitely. I mean, as someone who has his own company, I can imagine it would be, I mean, every minute you're doing that, you're not working on the company, so to speak. So
correct. So, the dedication, if you will, to this commitment of open standards, right? And I think that has been a pleasant surprise, even more than I thought, is that commitment. The other is, the technical quality of the work, the process. We're working on making things a bit faster and a little, I wouldn't say easier, because you've got to be careful when you go through a standards process. But we definitely do things that probably represent the way things were done 25, 20 years ago. And just because we've always done them doesn't mean that we should continue to do them. So we're looking at what can we safely discard, what can we focus on, and how can we make the standards process a little quicker and a little less painful, if you will, in some ways. And so people's openness to wanting to do that has also been a positive surprise. Because as you know, Ed, change is really hard. It's one of the hardest things you can do in an organization, particularly one that's been doing something for 30 years.
Well, I could imagine several things. First of all, I finding compromise, I guess, is not always so simple, because the stereotype of an engineer is they're completely fixed on their, everyone has their own passionate technologies, and of course also, the not invented here syndrome. I'm sure people are always backing the things of their company or their organization. But then, you talked about the speed. I mean, I feel like just in the last couple of years, maybe since COVID, we're seeing like a real acceleration of, I mean, obviously, of course, the AI stuff, but also just, the power of all the sensors that are now on phones and things like that, and the amount of data that makes possible. And it's just moving. It feels like it's really moving faster and faster. And so how do you, as an organization, how do you stay on top of that? Because, the pace of the technology gets so far ahead of even what we can even comprehend. And the AI example, it's like every day there's some new announcement, new thing, new companies springing up out of nowhere that are doing amazing things. It's a real challenge. I mean, just as an observer of the industry, even to stay on top of what's even possible. And then when you think about trying to, define that, and how does it work?
Yeah, well, there's the old saying, separate the wheat from the chaff, and there's a certain discipline to If you get so caught up in the daily announcements, it's a very dangerous thing. And even though we've got more and more data and more tools and more capabilities, actually some of the fundamental questions don't go away. And I think if you stick with what problem are we trying to solve and whose problem is it, then it helps distill, is this new data set useful or not? Could it be plugged in? What does it need in order to plug it in? Because typically the problems, they don't change that much, right? The fundamental problems. And what's interesting to me in seeing the geospatial industry over these many decades is how we're still saying, well, we got to educate the market about all the things that our tools can do and the amazing things geospatial can do. That tells me that's a problem we've created for ourselves, because we keep focusing on the technology and not the problem that's at hand and whose problem it is. Mm. I think if you stay rooted in what are the big problems of the day and whose problems are they, then that allows you to kind of filter out, as my grandmother used to say, a lot of the noise in the market, because we've got more noise in the market, but how much of it is really going to be helpful and in what way, I'm not so sure.
We had a talk last year at an event in Barcelona, and this was a guy who worked in the Earth observation side of things. And, you know, he made the case, he had recently, you know, the barrier is not the technology. The barrier is that the customers have no idea what the technology can do. And he met with some potential customer, and they were like, oh, it'd be cool if you could do this, isn't it? He's like, we've been able to do that for years. The customer had no idea. And so there was a huge gap in communication and making the technology accessible to some of the customers. Yeah,
but that's, you know, having spent a couple of years at doing some investing out of the valley, that's a classic product market fit problem. And it's not the customer's problem. It's back to my point, right? That if you've got a really good product and you understand your market fit, you're going to do fine. You're not going to run across those conversations. The other thing I would say about Earth observation in particular is a lot of the data is marginal in terms of what it does compared to what you can already do. Hmm. Right? And a lot of the math is old math, new compute. So we get caught up in shiny new buttons, but I can still do my coat up. That's a rough analogy, but I think you see what I mean. There's more and more data, but is it transformational in any way, or is it just another marginal slice? And maybe I can answer a question a little bit faster and a little bit easier, but is it really fundamentally changing anything?
Well, this is exactly the challenges that the businesses face, I guess. What are some of the new technologies and new standards that are currently being worked on at the OGC that you're most excited about? What things should we be aware of?
The big one, I think, and we're hearing it a lot from different sectors, is what's being called IPT, which is integrity, provenance, and trust. So, you know, is the data that you sent me, in fact, the data that you sent me? How do I know it? What's the provenance of the data? Hmm. Where have you gotten it from? What have you done to it? And then can I trust it? If you send it to me, can I trust that it's unaltered?
Right, there's a huge challenge, obviously, in the age of AI, everything can be fixed.
Massive. And, you know, other things come in, not just AI, but let's say we know that there's going to be more and more edge compute, right? Space-based sensors are collecting enormous amounts of data, and we already have a choke point getting that data down to ground. Right. And that problem is not going to get solved by faster modems and more ground stations and so forth. They're working on it, but it's not going to help anytime soon. So it's a natural case for processing data at the edge on the sensor. And so IPT becomes a big issue because, you know, without the raw data, how do I know that what your AI did to it on the machine hasn't materially altered the data in a way that I might make the wrong decision as a result, or make inferences that are not correct? So I think IPT, you'll see it become more and more of an issue across the board. And particularly with, and we see it already with non-GPS location technologies. Several companies working on whether it's measuring minute differences in magnetic fields to figure out where you are. Right.
We've had several talks about this, about the challenge with all the jamming, obviously, and the war,
spoofing,
and things like that. So,
yeah, not just jamming, but spoofing, making you think you're somewhere where you're not, or making right. someone else think you're somewhere where you're not. All of these are coming at us hard and fast. And in today's world where we're getting other actors that are leveraging cyber, this is a big issue and a big topic, and I think offers a lot of opportunity for us.
What, you know, when Stephen and I, you know, we were discussing that you were going to come on the show and that, you know, got us thinking about the OGC in general and things like that, you know, and he kind of made the point, you know, the combination of open source plus open data plus open standards is kind of the holy trinity. Do you see it that way, or you know, do you see, is OGC kind of building bridges with the open data world and the open source software world, or is it more you're just focused on the standards and, you know, whether it's used commercial providers or open providers, you're agnostic, or how do you see things?
Yeah, I think unfortunately there's a conflation of open. The conflation is we mean open source, open data, and open standards. Our focus is solving interoperability through open standards. Interestingly enough, one of my prior jobs was at a media network, and we funded a lot of the early open data partnerships, Open Data Institute in the UK, and so forth. Mm. And as you probably know, there was a big push to making data open by default. And if you talk to the leading thinkers about open data now, there's a much more nuanced idea of open data. It's not open by default anymore. It's as open as we can be, as closed as we need be. And that's because there are financial considerations as well as security considerations around open data. And so there's been an increased sophistication around what we mean by open data. And I think on open source, we don't pick winners. We have commercial vendors who are important part of the OGC and equally open source. And so if somebody can implement our standard in a commercial tooling, that's great. That increases expansion, exposure, and the exchange of data in a frictionless way. And some of our biggest supporters, like ESRI, Hexagon, and Bentley, put thousands of hours of unpaid time into helping to engineer some of these best standards. Now, is there code around reference implementation? Yes. Is that code important that it be open source? Yes. And even your commercial vendors will want any snippets of code around a reference implementation of a standard to be open source, right? Think about it for a second. If Hexagon wrote the code and it was only in Hexagon, Esri wouldn't be very happy about that low-level code being right. inside Hexagon. So this is what I meant by pre-competitive environments. Even commercial competitors understand that that low-level pre-competitive good, it's essential that that be available to everybody without restriction, without royalty payments, and so forth. So when we do have open source, it is only at that very low-level pre-competitive environment where everybody can benefit. So no copyleft. That's another big thing with our IP regime, Ed, is that we don't implement copyleft, meaning that it's free for commercial exploitation as well.
Okay. So what next now? What is you've been there a year, you found your footing. What are the goals for the coming? What would make you look back in a few years' time and say this was a great success?
Well, number one is increasing membership, the number of members. The other thing that we've done over this last year, a lot of stuff you won't see under the hood, but implementing modern ERP systems so that we can communicate better with our members. We're replacing our homegrown portal, which has been a fantastic tooling for us and made sense 25, 30 years ago, to build it in-house and run it on our own servers. But now, obviously, that doesn't make sense, and we're not able to give members the type of experience that they would want, particularly, say, the younger generation who are more on mobile. So we'll be implementing and rolling out in July a modern community platform that is purchased with a configured layer. So that old argument, Ed.
This then immediately raises a question for me. So, if someone becomes a member, if a small business like mine or an individual becomes a member, what is their commitment to the OGC? How much involvement are they going to be having? How much communication? How much time, effort are they going to be putting in? Is that up to them, or is there some kind of minimum commitment?
No. So if we create, the hypothesis is that if we create and curate a really fun, engaging experience with people from around the world who are trying to work on similar problems, and the portal, as we're going to call it going forward, the Agora, the old Greek word for market space, is that you'll have the communication tools, you can stand up your own webinars, you can create working groups, and you can communicate with people from around the world and say, do you have this problem? Do you feel like trying to figure this out together? And we curate that environment for people working on geospatial problems globally. And like anything, you get out of it what you put in. You can be an observer and just watch what's going on, and that's absolutely fine. You can read materials, you can look at reference materials, and you can just take it and implement it. That's fair enough. That's great. Some people get really involved, want to lead working groups. Others have a commercial interest in saying, I want to drive this as a standard because I think it could be good for business and it would be good to get ahead of this and be seen as a thought leader. That's perfectly fine as well. Or you might be a government that says, I want to market signal and I want innovation to go this direction. So I'm going to show my interest in the community solving this problem for me. And our job is to curate that. Our job is not to do. Our job is to help guide and help the community get to a point where you've solved the problem together.
Okay. Sorry, I took us off on a bit of a tangent. You were describing the goals for the future. So let us...
Well, we want not just an increased membership, but the point I was... getting towards was we want members to be more engaged. And so we are going to look at ways where we can track engagement of members. And do they like it? Do they not like it? The other thing we want to do with membership is if a standard has gone quiet for some amount of time, if nobody's been working on a working group for 6 months, we're going to say, hey, we're going to put this in the freezer. And, we want to keep a more agile mindset of let's get behind things that seem to have real traction and real movement. And a good example of that is I think OGC probably has been a bit behind in terms of the cloud native environment and world. And, how do we become more helpful to the cloud native world?
Very, very active space. I mean, so many cool things happening there over the last couple of years. So,
yeah.
Okay, fantastic. As we kind of wrap up here, what would be the message you would like to give out to the GeoMob community? Who it's a broad mix, but I would think we have a lot of people who could potentially be individual contributors. you know, what would be your words to them?
Well, we don't want it to be an exclusive place. We don't want to be seen as exclusive. We want everyone to join. We want to be this technical solution community that makes it easy for people to come together and try and solve problems, and learn from their peers and connect with their peers globally. Give us a try. If it's not working well, tell us. We're in listening mode. But we think it's important to have this neutral, curated space where, you know, you can come inside, if you will, and put your energy and brain power to solving that common problem, that low-level problem. I think it's crucial that the space have that. One piece of advice I got when I was asking people about OGC and whether, you know, to take the job and get advice, somebody from a very large commercial SAT provider said, I think the best thing OGC can do is connect the big guys with the little guys and the little guys with the big guys. And that really stuck with me, right? That there's no pay to play in OGC. If you pay more money, you really can't have more influence than if you're a smaller entity. There are very few places that allow you to do that. You can be in a space where you can sit alongside a CTO from a very large corporate and have the same voice. So I think that's critical to have that in the industry. And, you know, the more people we have engaging with whatever your thought process is, whatever your particular ideology might be, just, you know, come and help solve these problems.
Well, that's fantastic, Peter. I mean, in many ways, that exactly echoes our mission at GeoMob, which I don't know that we're solving all the problems, but we are bringing people together to have to learn, to share ideas, to mix and mingle, and exactly what you described. You know, at the GeoMob events, we intentionally try to put people in a social atmosphere where, you know, there aren't hierarchies, there aren't you know, you're just hanging out, and you, everyone talks about the shared problems. And that's how creative solutions get found. So,
I think this is why it's so good to chat with you, Ed, and get connected to the GeoMob crowd, because the conversations that you can have, you know, when you get to know somebody, it's much easier to try and work on a common problem. And I'd love to see flows of ideas and exchanges between GeoMob and OGC and OGC and GeoMob. What we can't be in the industry is fragmented. We can't each have little churches, and, you know, we need to work together, because we are still a niche industry, if you will. And to your earlier point about explaining to someone, well, we've always been able to do that. Part of it is because we do tend to fragment. As players in the industry, we do tend to be a bit more ideological about our approach. And I think actually the more the community comes together, the more we can act as a horizontal layer and affect and influence many different vertical markets. I think that's our real strength. And that's where we should head, is to be that connective tissue at a horizontal level.
I agree entirely. And frankly, I think that also better reflects kind of the modern working world, right? I mean, the days of someone, you know, joining one company and staying there until they retire at age 65, that, you know, I'm sure that does still happen, but that's the rare exception. You know, now we have much more flow between companies, between technology stacks, between countries, between, you know, the people working on shared projects, as we said, open source, open data. And so in that regard, creating the infrastructure that helps us share these ideas, you know, define best practices, work together, is exactly what we need. So in that regard, let me close by congratulating you on your first year, Peter, and wishing you luck going forward. And we will be certainly looking for more ways to collaborate. So, I advise everyone listening, please check out the OGC. Have a look and see where you can pitch it.
Thanks ever so much, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.